night. We're going to have another show dealing with metaphysics and spirituality, of course. Science always is part of what we do. And if you are interested, of course, you can call in. And the number should be right before your eyes, I think, somewhere on that screen. And tonight, I thought we'd deal with the subject. I have talked about this a couple times in the past, never on this actual station, but I've done it on a few other stations. And I thought that we'd deal with spiritual service groups versus cults. Most people don't know what the difference is, and it can be confusing at times, but there's a huge difference. I mean, as a matter of fact, there's like extreme differences between these two concepts. So I call this, number two, like a second version of those prior shows that I've done years ago, because I'm going to go into it from a little different angle and try to explain it hopefully even better than I've done in the past. Always try to do a better job if I can about these things. And I think the first place to start is just to talk about what is a spiritual group. Because a lot of people say, well, spiritual service group, what does that mean? You're serving who? Well, you're actually serving everybody, because it's about serving the co-serving with the creator of our universe, God, if you prefer, and in such a capacity, regardless of what the nature of that service is, that's the basic concept. So you might say that religious orders could be considered spiritual service groups because they do that. Many non-religious types of spiritual groups that don't even call themselves spiritual groups exist. And because they are actually trying to co-serve with, in a virtuous way, their creator, even though they don't necessarily define it in such a way. Now, let's talk about that. What does it mean to define something as being, you know, in service to something that some people may not even believe exists, much less have a clearly defined understanding of it? And this is how I look at it. Now, you, of course, could see it differently. When someone is trying to co-serve with their creator and they don't even know that that's what they're doing, they are still attempting to make the world around themselves a more virtuous place, a place that provides for greater goodness. I'm using words here, again, even those may need further definition. A world that allows others to be free and inclusive, and for and extends inclusiveness to everybody else to do the same if they so choose. So it provides for all of those things that I'm discussing. And if a person is doing that, even if they are not aware that they are doing so because they're co-creating with their creator, they are providing spiritual service. That's how I would define it. And that is a very large number of people in some respects. Many people are doing this on some level and are not unaware of it. I wrote this in the textbook I wrote, and a lot of people have come back to me and said, well, how could there be so many people that you say are doing this but may not recognize it? And I give them the same answer, is that because in our minds we've defined oftentimes the word spiritual with religious and with some specific image or idea about God or a creator without looking at it as a result issue. In other words, if the results are to create more of the creator, more of God, within everything else, because that's what goodness is. That's even where the word comes from. Or inclusiveness, freedom, purpose, creation, creativity. These are all words that kind of fit into the general idea of what I'm trying to explain. If we're doing all this and we're helping others to do the same, particularly, then we are, even if it's not on our mind, co-creating. And we're helping God, by how I define it, to grow more in everything else. which is how God grows, effectively. God doesn't grow more in itself as a being, if people believe that God is a being, but God grows more in everything else that is God's creations. Wow, interesting idea. Okay, so this is spiritual. Spirit also, another way to define it, is spirit is the thought of our Creator. So anything is spiritual that exhibits that thought in the process. So if our thoughts are somewhat in sync with the thoughts of our Creator, that would be a spiritual thinking. And a spiritual group uses spiritual thought. So that's another way to define it. Let's skip. Let's change gears here about cults. What is a cult? A cult is a process that can resemble some types of spiritual groups. In other words, it looks like, on an exterior view, like the people within it might be exclaiming that they're doing something in the name of God or name of light or the name of something that we assume to be spiritual. And that's a bit of a problem, isn't it? Because, oddly, many spiritual groups, people functioning within spiritual groups, don't recognize that what they're doing is necessarily a part of God. Yet cults, more often than not, claim the reverse. So it could be very confusing. Now, that doesn't mean that a spiritual group that does recognize that they're functioning as a co-creator with God, or at least trying to, it doesn't mean they're a cult. So don't think that because one thing implies another, the reverse of it is the opposite, isn't it? So the important thing here now is to look at what then is a cult actually doing, because since a spiritual group is defined by what it's doing, then a cult should be defined by what it is doing, right? I mean, we should use the same kind of means of investigating, so to speak, what we're talking about, defining it. And a cult, basically, instead of trying to create more of God, their main emphasis is in creating more of, we'll say, self-focused means of expression in both the members and oftentimes the leaders of the cult. So it's about them. It's about getting to become more of something in themselves, improving something more about themselves, not for the purpose of doing good, but for the purpose of having power and control and oftentimes and sometimes material gain as well. So oddly, if we look at the differences here, people in spiritual groups are oftentimes giving of themselves, giving of their material possessions, and receiving little or nothing in return for what they're doing. Whereas in cults, it's the reverse of that. There is a desire, and oftentimes an action, of receiving and getting and taking and having, and especially having power or control. Control is a big factor. Big factor. We'll get more into that as we go on to today's show. But so the first, I guess, red flag for people who are concerned about, well, is this a spiritual group or is it some kind of cult? Well, what is it that the purpose of the cult or group is? If the purpose is to co-create with the Creator and to produce more of a goodness in the world, more freedom, more inclusiveness, love, and to help others to do the same, that's a spiritual group. But if it's to become, like, special, to cleanse oneself to so that one has more abilities, one has more awareness, more everything else for their own sakes. I mean, it's okay to have more awareness. I want everybody to be as aware as possible. I want everybody to be as conscious as possible. But for the benefit of all others. If the benefit is for themselves, and especially for maybe leaders of the group, or even for the individuals and leaders together, then that is falling into the range of cult because it is about selfish motives and purposes and behaviors. So that's a really, I'm trying to make it as simple as possible so that it can be clearly understood. And unfortunately, most people who either write about this subject or teach about it are oftentimes, and I'm surprised about this, not so clear in their definitions. So I'm not so sure they understand the differences in these types of groups. And I'm not sure that they are conveying a much of a clear understanding to others that they teach. That's why I think that I have shows on this every couple of years, because this is an issue. People that get caught into cults can be harmed, and sometimes they do great harm. Now, why is that? Well, to begin with, you know, some people might say, well, you just said the people that are in cults are in it because of what they're getting in some way. They feel more powerful. They feel more important. They may be getting even some material gain. They may be functioning in a way where they just feel like they're special. All those things. What's wrong with that? Well, what's wrong with that is that they're becoming more selfish and they're moving away from being part of God, because God's unselfish. And they're many times functioning in ways interactively with the rest of society that may be in some ways destructive. They may raise their children in ways which are oftentimes very selfish and self-focused. So these are things we concern ourselves with because they're harming themselves. Now, does that mean we have a right to stop them from doing it? I don't think so. That's my opinion now. Others say, oh, yeah, we should intervene, stop them, and all this stuff. You know, if lots of people choose selfish ways of living besides being part of cults, and we don't stop them. I think that we, you know, you could go overboard on this thing and say, well, there shouldn't be any cults then because it has bad results on people. Well, lots of things have bad results on people. People are selfish all the time in a multitude of ways. And sometimes our society even smiles and rewards that kind of behavior. So we've got to be very careful. Remember, if we're spiritual, we allow people freedom. We recognize that they by nature have freedom. And even the freedom to be somewhat destructive to themselves. Now, if they start doing things that are very harmful to others, and they are exercising control, power, some kind of constraintive behavior on others, well, that's a different story. Then I think intervening is necessary, and probably in most cases, legal. But that's a good question, and we have to have a good judgment to be able to determine sometimes exactly where the line is about that sort of thing. Now, what about the idea that cults are sometimes satanic, or that practice some type of malevolent ideology? Well, again, if it's just that ideology and it isn't actions being taken upon others against their will, then I would say, you know what? That's still on the side of them having the freedom to choose to do that, and we need to respect that. We don't have to like it. We could say, well, gee, it's not a wonderful way of life, but the point is that the other people have that freedom to choose to go down that path. Now, what if it's, again, destructive or harmful, maybe violent towards others? Well, that's again, crossed the line now, and now we're in a place where it's just plain breaks laws, it's illegal, it could be threatening of life, it could be kidnapping of some sort, it could involve many different issues. And that being the case, and plain and simple, yeah, we should do everything we can to prevent those kinds of activities and behaviors from taking place. And again, here, we have to be clear in our definitions, in our understandings, so that we react in an appropriate way to how people are behaving themselves. This just makes sense, right? And we don't react to just how they think or feel, because that's not an appropriate thing. I mean, people think and feel many different ways, and they have the freedom and right to do so. And we need to respect that in all circumstances. Okay, so let me move ahead here and talk about some of the elements that, again, comparing these two concepts of spiritual service groups and cults. Now, some people say, well, what if it isn't a service group? What if it's a spiritual group? Like, people only do this for their own liking, like they go to church, but they're not really into doing much service. Is that okay? Again, there's no activity if there's no service. So you don't have all three parts of God represented. You might have just the spirit part, the thinking part. People are immersed in that for whatever reason they have, but they don't want to take any action. They don't want to do something that would be more creative. Is that okay? Sure. That's perfectly okay. It's sort of incomplete. I would like to see more of people actually doing service if they're in a spiritual context, a spiritual group. But it's all right. And it doesn't represent a cult. Even if the person has or people have a lot of self-focused issues, if it's spiritual in the sense that it's still about trying to think about and understand the Creator, it's okay. But what if it's not about trying to think about and replicate the Creator? Let's say it's a satanic cult that doesn't exercise any action, but people sit around and think about how to become more selfish, how to immerse themselves in a completely material existence, possibly some kind of excessive sexual thoughts, or maybe getting into sexual activities as well. What if it's some of those things? Does it then lead into something that should be banned or prevented? No. But is it a cult? Yes. It's a cult now under that basis because it's all about people's self. It's about their lower self and how they can become more important, more special in themselves, or derive more pleasure in life. Maybe hedonism is their primary focus. And therefore, it isn't about co-creating with the Creator. It isn't about trying to increase goodness in the world or inclusiveness. It doesn't have any of the spiritual definitions. It's strictly about themselves. So then I would say that is a cult. Now, it's a cult that possibly isn't doing any harm, and we don't have a right necessarily to do anything about it, but it still falls into the area of cult, and the people are being harmed because when we become more selfish, we reduce our level of consciousness, we kind of go back in some respects in terms of our development of ourselves as we would under normal levels of lifetimes, and it is harmful. It's harmful to ourselves. It reduces the level of soul contact. And assuming the individual, the person, has a connection with their soul still, that lifetime is not going to register as being very productive or helpful in the direction that the soul was looking to go. So there's a lot of negative reasons for that. But again, the prevention of it is more harmful than just allowing people to go through it, provided they don't do activities that are harmful to others. You see how this works. And it's a difficult thing, isn't it? You almost want to say, well, gee, you know, it sounds like so terrible, but we have to allow it to be. And now you're in the same position that God is. I mean, think about it. God gives freedom to people to even choose to become evil. And God doesn't necessarily directly stop that from taking place. Well, if we are functioning as co-creators with our Creator, we have to do the same thing, you see? And that's the problem we all face, that there are some of us, some people, that actually choose to live a very dark existence, away from the light. Light is just another word for spiritual, but away from God's thinking. And this is a it's a bitter pill for us to take, because for many people, they want to do. They feel like they almost are responsible for doing something about people who are fouling such negativity and darkness. And yet, if we're really going to follow our own creator's thought, spiritual thought, we need to allow, or just not interfere with, other people's thinking and or internal reactions together, provided it doesn't harm anyone else. So the people in the cult might harm each other to some extent, provided that they are doing so freely and they are adults. There's nothing wrong with it. Now, what happens if you have children involved? People who do not yet have the capability, in some cases the rights, to be able to prevent themselves from being harmed by others' thinking and or interactions within a closed situation. That's difficult, isn't it? And, of course, we've seen this question come up in recent times, like in Texas, etc. What if children are being harmed? And then what kind of issues are harm? Is just behavior harmful, or is the teaching and inculcating of very dark ways harmful? Boy, that is a tough decision, isn't it? It's a tough way of thinking. And here's the answer, at least my answer. Of course, if you have a different one, please call in, But I'm going to give an answer which, for some people, is probably not going to be what they really like to do or hear. But you've got to look at it from this standpoint. If the first tenet, and this is what I'm saying, I believe, the first tenet of our Creator is freedom and freedom to think, then one of the issues involved in that is also, according to the mores and the way that we allow people to raise their children in our society, now some societies may have some differences about this, that parents have the right to inculcate and raise their children in ways that they, as being a parent, or parental right, so choose. And even though we may disagree with, even vehemently, I really disagree with the way they're bringing that kid up, it doesn't matter, because that is the way we have chosen to enjoy the rights of our society, which includes parental rights. It's a difficult situation, isn't it? So what I'm suggesting is that if a parent exercises their right to bring up a child, I'm going to bring up some very extreme situations, in a satanic cult where the children are being brought up to worship the devil, and where they are becoming very hedonistic and very materialistic and selfish and brutal and hostile towards others, unfortunately, that is a parental right that we say is okay in our society. Now, some societies don't necessarily do this. I want to be careful. In our society, though, that's a legal thing. Now, there have been some times when in some states, not necessarily the United States, because I am talking about the United States right now, that some state governments have actually said, well, we don't know if that's true. And we think it's harmful to our child to be brought up in a certain way. And they've tried to argue that case. There have been a few times where they may have won the right to argue it or whatever. But I'm saying this, to me, is the way we have set up our society. And unfortunately, I don't think we have the right to interfere. Now, you could say, well, that's really harmful for the kid. You already said that. You said that here's a kid who doesn't have much rights, they can't really choose anything, and their parents want them to become, some kind of evil monster. Should we be permitting that to take place? And the tough answer to that is probably, in a lot of cases, yeah, we have set up our society such that that's usually the case. Now, what if the parents are teaching the child to act out and to do harm to others? Nope. Now, that's how you cross the line again. You take actions that affect other people, and now the state or the government or whatever can probably come in and say, you know what, now you're hurting others, we're going to prevent that from being the case. Now, I know this is tough. These are tough philosophical issues. And what about other countries where they live by different standards and different thoughts? Well, you know, if you live in a very socialized country, you might have a different answer than one I'm stating. Freedom costs us something, and you need to understand, freedom has a cost. And the cost is that it means that it isn't just we are free. We have to make sure people are free that we don't care for. People are free that we don't like their ideas. And people are free, if they have children, to raise their children, you know, demonstrating and teaching ideas we don't like. They actually have a right to do that. Now, again, in some states, there's been some argument against what I'm saying. And, of course, that's one of the issues about living in places where there's different kinds of laws from one state or one locality to another. And I guess that's good, because you could always move someplace else, you know, if you want. Maybe that's part of why it's so good to have diversity. Okay, so that's a tough one, isn't it? And it's something to really think about. So basically, some people in cults probably have the right to raise their children with some darkness in their thinking. But they don't have a right to abuse the children in any physical way. They don't have a right to teach the children to abuse anybody else or to even allow them to be abusive to others in any physical sense, and possibly maybe a verbal sense as well. So acting out is not a permissible issue. So don't get me wrong about that. And certainly child abuse is absolutely positively wrong. When I talk about child abuse, I'm talking about locking a kid in a closet. I'm talking about sexual abuses, absolutely ridiculous, you know, or anything like that. Or any type of severe corporal punishment. I mean, if can you slap a kid's hands? Probably okay, you know, but some places not anymore. I don't know. But you know, you can't hang them out of a window, throw them down flights of stairs, smother them, choke them, or whatever. That's out. Okay? All right. So, very interesting. I find this a really fascinating subject in a sense, and something for us all to be thinking about. We're coming to the middle of the show here, so I want you to think about this, because these are really good questions. When we come back, we'll talk about other factors that really separate spiritual service groups from cults, and how we can probably improve our society by reducing the number of cults and getting people to understand the difference and to focus more on being part of a spiritual group, because really that's a very good thing. So we'll talk about that more when we come back from our break in about 2 minutes from right now.
Hi, everyone. Since childhood, I've had questions about my life and life in general that I couldn't find adequate answers to. Questions like, why am I here? Why are others here? Does the universe have a purpose? And how does that relate to my life? More recently, I've been wondering what happens when we die, especially the reasons why. I'm more of a doubter than a believer in many things, and answers that include the whys allow me to think and figure out the truth for myself. I've been reading a book, Life's Hidden Meaning. This one book contains more answers, including the whys, than all other sources I've read or heard. It's amazing to me that every one of my questions has been thoroughly answered. More importantly, I have found that all of these answers so far have checked out to be true. I hope this message helps some of you in your quest for better understanding. The name of this wonderful book is, again, Life's Hidden Meaning by metaphysician Niles McFlower. Some bookstores sell it. I got my copy directly from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com. Life's Hidden Meaning may enlighten your mind and bring some peace and joy to your heart.
Hun, What book are you reading?
It's a novel, kind of, about romance, love, and spiritual life in general.
Kind of a novel? What do you mean?
Well, it's based on some real-life experiences and even real characters. Some of their experiences are fascinating and remarkable. I can't put this book down.
How come the title is Afterlife Love?
That's part of the fascination. This book describes the afterlife in intricate detail and even explains why things are the way they're explained.
But how can anyone write about or know that?
Some of the characters travel out of body to some places that people who've already died also go to. I'm finding it completely believable because it all makes sense and fits into a bigger picture for me.
Hon, what happens to these people?
You can read it for yourself when I'm done if you want.
Better yet, I'll get my own copy so we can discuss it while we read. Let me see. I'll write down the title. It's Afterlife Love by Niles McFlower. MacFlower.
Afterlife Love is available in some bookstores and from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com or 480-966-3132. That's 480-966-3132.
Back. This is Why Life Is. I'm your host, Niles McFlower. Tonight we're talking about spiritual service groups versus cults, sort of volume two. Actually, I think this is the third show I've done on this subject, but not ever on this particular station. So I'll just split the difference and call it the second. And some of you have heard some of the other shows on other stations, so that's okay. That's fine. You also recognize I'm including new information tonight. Okay, so let's go on with this. What about circumstances where people are in highly structured religious, we'll say, groups that in some ways go against some of the ideas we have as how to raise children, how to maintain a family, be married, all kinds of things get into the aspects of this factor. But these people believe, now, that they are following the tenets of their religion. Okay. How does that compare to being in a spiritual service group? Well, I would argue that they are not a spiritual group. Just because they believe that they are following the way their religion teaches to worship God. A spiritual group, remember, has to do with exercising both spiritual thought, and if it's a spiritual service group, you're doing it for the benefit of others. And most of the time, the more radical, now there's some exceptions to this, so I'll get into those too, but the more radical religious groups are doing so because they're just being told that this is the way to do it. They're not necessarily exercising any thought about it, and they're not necessarily co-creating with their creator. They just are literally obeying the tenets of their specific religion. There are some religions, as an example, that believe, and some of these are pretty well-known religions, that believe that people should not go to or be involved with most types of doctors, because they believe that all healing should come directly through some kind of divine intervention, God. And so they don't believe in necessarily taking medicines or being treated or have surgeries or whatever. Now, so, you know, in our society, in the United States at least, for the most part, it has been recognized that this is okay for adults to make a decision about. But then, in some cases, some parts of our laws have now said that this is not okay for children. In the 1940s, the Supreme Court case said actually a child can deny or refuse to accept the services of a physician, and those wishes have to be obeyed. But it can't come from the parents, it has to come from the child. It's kind of a weird thing, 'cause, you know, I just can't imagine like a 10-year-old or a 5-year-old saying, well, I want this or I want that. I don't know how they could really come to those conclusions, but that was part of a case that was heard in, I think, 42 or 3 by the Supreme Court of the United States. It's kind of a weird ruling if you think about it. Now, but there's other rulings that kind of contradict that. And so if someone has this belief structure and they say, well, I don't want my child to take a certain medicine, I don't want them to have a certain type of treatment because I don't believe in it, then the problem is that some cases nowadays, agencies of government have come in and said, hey, we believe you're abusing your child because this is a procedure that has been proven 90-some-odd% effective in this particular case, and if the child doesn't get it, but they have a risk of 95% of dying and all this other stuff, so we're saying you've got to do it. And that is a problem, isn't it? Because it gets back to that question of freedom. And does the parent have the right? Does the child have the right to demand that they have, maybe if they're both have the same understanding, to pursue whatever means of medicine or of treatment for whatever they want to have treated for themselves? And here's my thought process on it. Again, I'm going to give my opinion. That when the child and the parents or legal guardians are in full agreement of what it is they are seeking, and there's no coercion or force coming, especially from the parent or guardian onto the child, I believe in those circumstances they should do whatever they choose, even if it ends in death or further illness. But if the child, when not under the direct influence of the parents, says, hey, I want to do something else because I don't like what's happening to me, then they should have the right to get whatever treatment is available for them. And if you reverse the situation, if the child wants to do something that the parent does not want to do, and society says what the parent wants is better than what the child wants, then I believe that the parent has justification to do what they seek is the best for their child. If you followed everything I said, I think that's the most closest to following what I would call spiritual thinking as possible. So I'm not saying that in every case it's going to be cut and dried. But I'm saying that that, as a general principle, if you follow the logic of what I just said, that will probably get you through most of the circumstances that people find themselves in. It still goes against the local laws in some parts of our country, and certainly many other countries as well. And it is not hard and fast anywhere. In other words, you can't even say that it's definitely going to be the case no matter where you are. I'm very big into alternative medicine and a lot of things that I think are curative and helpful that are not either accepted and maybe even contrary to what's in allopathic medicine, particularly in the United States and possibly the whole Western parts of the world. And because of that, I'm quite sensitive to this issue. But I also recognize the fact that unless the child's on board with the situation, just a parent desiring it, I think, is insufficient. And there needs to be input from both for it to be a done deal in terms of attempting anything that's alternative. And so this is very interesting. I have yet to come up with a fully adequate formula, so to speak, in every situation, because I think some have some uniqueness to them that maybe require even more, we'll say, application of various concepts that go beyond just the general ones I'm giving you. But nonetheless, I think this covers a lot of the cases, and it's something to greatly consider. Now, how does this define itself? Well, I was just defining it in a spiritual sense. And what happens if it is completely a you know, just some kind of adamant response by a person saying, well, this is what my religion says. It isn't what I spiritually live by, but it's what my religion says. Then, interestingly, this is going to shock you, I think that religion is acting more as a cult. Because although it isn't necessarily trying to improve the power or control necessarily of its members, someone is exercising extreme power and control over the members without adequate understanding or consciousness, and a lack of spiritual thought is being applied in the situation because it doesn't follow the tenets that I just came up with. So on both sides, both on the governmental side and possibly on some very narrowly applied religious sides, there can be inequities and problems produced by people not following spiritual principles. So spiritual service groups and spiritual groups in general are very, the best way to describe it, very judicious, very wise, highly reflective and thoughtful in how they take any kind of action, particularly ones that are, we'll say, difficult ones. Whereas in cults, the opposite is true. You find that, generally speaking, very little thought is applied to almost anything. Things are done by rote and done by some rules that are made up by who knows who, and usually by people who are abusing and using power of tactics to force people to do things. What about the question of leaving a group? Well, if an individual wants to leave a group that is a spiritual group, they just leave. There should be never any kind of forceful prevention, like, oh, well, you can't leave because you owe us 6 months of your time, or you didn't do this or that, therefore we're not going to let you go, or we just don't like your people leaving when they want to, or whatever. Well, that, plain and simple, certainly falls into the cult. And one of the problems with cults is oftentimes people are literally held hostage. Anytime you see that, that's not a spiritual group. If someone is held hostage, believe me, that is not a spiritual group. Because the actions that are being taken are denying the freedom of the member themselves. How could that ever be spiritual? It's ridiculous. So, I mean, just obviously, I mean, that should be an obvious red flag if people are being held against their will in some fashion, for whatever the reason might be. I don't know what the reasons are. Because each of the cults that usually function have all kinds of bizarre, we'll say, rationalizations for breaking the general tenets that I'm talking about. They come up with, you know, fictitious kinds of things to be able to prevent people from doing what they may want. Okay, what about people who seek to have new thoughts brought in and to bring in ideas that may challenge the other ideas that are already present in a group? Well, same kind of thing. If a person is not allowed to bring in challenging ideas, then there's something wrong, because freedom of thinking is part of spiritual, right? And so if you can't think freely, then there's something wrong. I mean, someone should be able to say, hey, this is my thought on this, and I think it may be different than other people's thought. And so everybody should pay attention to that and listen to the thought. That doesn't mean they have to go along with it. I don't want you to think that one person dictates to everyone else in any circumstances. Another thing about cults is usually there is a leader who may also be called the great one, guru, teacher, whatever, who basically controls everybody's interactions, actions, etc. Because, again, it's a power thing. Whereas in a spiritual group, they're highly democratic. Oftentimes, the teacher of the group is not the leader. That sounds strange, I know, but it's oftentimes true. Because teachers do something very different than leaders. Leaders are sacrificial. They provide example by having to help people to make additional sacrifices for themselves. They don't force them on it. And teachers are helping people become inclusive and more conscious and have greater understanding. But it's a contradiction sometimes for them to be able to do that while if they were trying to lead at the same time, because sometimes the first part of God's mind, which is, has to do with this leadership thing, is in contradiction with the understanding part. So it's better that both parts are represented by different people, if possible. It isn't always possible, but it's and the more advanced groups usually have that as a means. So it's a good thing. Believe me, that's really a good thing. Now, you won't find it in religious groups as often as in non-religious groups. Non-religious groups oftentimes have a separate teacher from a leader. So that's kind of, that's actually a good thing. So you might say, why is that the case? It has to do with the nature of religion. Religion tends to be more specifically directed in one direction. And because of that, leaders and teachers tend to be melded in more into one individual thing in comparison. But regardless, this is an important element. So if there is this lacking of, we'll say, openness to ideas, the thought, and if people aren't being regimentated into having to obey, you will obey this, you will obey that, no matter what, well, that's ridiculous. Each person should have the ability to talk about and explain their position. And if it's not in accord with the others, then the person could choose to leave a group, or they could choose to stay and be in accord with the others, but say that they may have an objection, and then see how it turns out. Generally speaking, spiritual groups try to be unanimous in their thinking, but sometimes they can't achieve that, but nonetheless, that's where a leader comes in and has to make a decision about the direction that the group is going to be taking, and usually in consort with getting some understanding from a teacher if the teacher's present. So these are the ways that spiritual groups tend to function. They function very much open, and they allow people to have the choices to make decisions. Most importantly, has to do with material concerns. If all of the material wealth, particularly money, is controlled by a single individual, almost always there's a lack of spiritual development in a group, and usually they are cults. So, and that sounds strange. A lot of people say, well, gee, just because one person has control of the money. Well, you know what? Control of money is control of compressed time and energy of all the people in the group. That's what money is compressed time and energy. So if you're controlling the compressed time and energy of each member in a group, and you know, then obviously that's a big control issue, and that's wrong. So that's a really big thing. If you can get to understanding who is controlling the money, then you can fairly quickly decide whether it's a cult or a spiritual group. Spiritual groups almost always have the control is spread out among virtually all the members. Everybody has a say-so in some of the money issues, and it isn't controlled by a single person. And you could say, gee, that really challenges my idea of a lot of different kinds of groups. It may, and it's something to seriously consider. Because what I'm saying is pretty radical. I'm saying that there's a lot of groups out there that may call themselves spiritual groups, but if everything's controlled by one person, especially money, which is all the compressed time and energy people are putting into the group, then at that point, we have to seriously question whether this is a spiritual group or it's actually a cult, but no one would ever maybe call it a cult. Isn't that fascinating? Like I said, there's a lot of spiritual groups that are called cults, and a lot of cults that are not identified as such and call themselves spiritual groups, or others may even think they are, and they're really not. Wow. That's kind of a mind-blower, isn't it? I would think it is, because I know that there's a lot of people who have experience with some groups that they would think one way or the other in contradiction to what I'm saying. But at any rate, those are my thoughts about it. Okay, then how do we solve the problem about there being literally hundreds of cults, like just in the United States? And these cults are actually producing some level of negativity in terms of the development of people. They certainly not. They could be spiritual, and a lot of the people are looking for a spiritual group and don't know it and end up in a cult. What can be done? Well, the first thing is education. What I'm doing right now, if this hasn't, I hope, if you know somebody who is like, you think might be in a cult, tell them to listen to this show. It's going to be, you know, online. You can listen to it any time. Because it helps to gain an understanding. A lot of people don't know what the difference is. They don't understand that what one kind of group might be one thing, another kind. They don't get it. And it's easy to become confused because the window dressing, because of the appearance of a group might be one thing, and what it really is might be something else. And that goes in both directions. Like I said, some spiritual groups are really great spiritual groups, but others have labeled them as cults. And in vice versa, there's maybe even more cults that that try to call themselves to be spiritual groups. And some of these cults are quote-unquote various kinds of religions, or they might be, if they're not a religion, they might be some kind of New Age kind of enlightenment type of thing where, gee, just join us, pay this much money, and we'll give you this or that. But there's underneath it this power and control and the money thing as well. Follow the money. A lot of people say follow the money. I think that's true when it comes to this particular subject particularly. It's especially true that if you follow the money, I think you might find some truth in it. So, okay, education. Big, big part of the answer. What if you think, like, somebody is in a cult and they're a close friend or a relative? Or should you, like, hire someone to intervene? I have a lot of, again, we go back to the beginning of the show. They still have to have the freedom to choose to leave. You could say, yeah, but I read that, you know, people can be, like, semi-hypnotized, they can be brainwashed and all this other stuff. My belief is that most people are not brainwashable. And the ones that are, choose that as means to compensate for problems they have in themselves. They need psychotherapy more than they need intervention. Now, is there some way you can get them psychotherapy while they're in this cult? I don't know. But that's usually what the problem is. It isn't about the cult, although, of course, if they're being held without their will, it could be somewhat true. But I'm saying that it's usually an internal struggle they have in themselves. And the reason they join the cult is because of this problem that's lacking themselves. So always be cognizant of that factor, that it's not just an issue of going and grabbing someone and taking them away. It isn't going to necessarily solve the problem. It may make it worse for them, anyway. So be cognizant of that. Anyway, we're running out of time. There's more I would like to tell you about what things we could do in the future about cults in our society, but it would take another show. So maybe we'll look at that for some time in the future. Okay, I just want to mention that if you're in the Phoenix area, you can go hear Mimi, who's a member of the spiritual group I'm a member of, talk about understanding evil from 7 p.m. to 8:15 p.m. over at Mesa Fiesta Borders, you know, Borders Books and Music, 1361 South Alma School Road, if you're in that general area. And that will be on Monday, this coming Monday, which is September 21st. So if you have some time, you want to go visit her, please do. And she's going to talk about it, and you can participate in the conversation as well. If you want to reach me, thoughts@whylifeis.com. Check out our website, agelesswisdom.com. We are still looking for people to be somewhat helpful. We need more people helping us. And if you want to, please, please give us a call. Number's on the website, and we would love to hear from you. Anyway, I'm running out of time. Just also, if you do you want to check out any resveratrol, it's great stuff. I'm still using it. It works. Works better all the time. We're out of time for right now. And until next week, this has been Niles McFlower for Why Life Is.